was with the light that burns within each of us, that helps us to put forth our best to the world, that we have illuminated our chalice. And we remember those words that are written in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas. No one lights a lamp and hides it under a bushel basket, but instead puts it on a lampstand for all to see. That's what we're called to do. We're called to let our light, the light of this faith community, shine as a beacon of hope and of love, of peace and justice for all to see. I invite you now to rise as you're able and join in singing hymn number 118 in the Gray Hymnal, This Little Light of Mine. And please now be attentive to a message from our Director of Religious Education, Michelle Cote.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, today the theme of this service is called Generosity Sunday. And I'm asking this to the older kids, so like third, fourth, fifth graders, what does generosity mean? What's it mean to be generous? I'm going to go over to Jamie. Jamie, come on over here so you can use the mic.
Generosity is what you care for someone else and you give. Sometimes maybe if someone's poor and you're like really rich or something, you'll maybe give them something of yours to help them survive.
That's definitely one form of generosity. Any other input to that? What else can you do to be generous? James.
If you find someone who's homeless, you can let them live in your house with them. And also, when I first heard you, I thought you said generosity.
Nope. Generosity. Sure, you could actually have some friends that a member of their church became homeless, and they let them live in their house for several weeks. That's extreme generosity. How about generosity that you can do, like, on an everyday, like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday? What else could you do?
You could, like, be kind to people.
That's a perfect answer. You could be kind to someone. Someone else have their hand up? Lila.
You could lend a pencil to someone.
Simple as lending a pencil to someone. Okay, here's Ruby.
Thanks.
And also,
so what you could do for generosity is, like, you could be, like, nice to somebody who, like, just moved here.
Another perfect example. I'm wearing this sweatshirt because to me, this is one of my favorite pieces of clothing. And not because it's comfy, that's one of the reasons. But can anyone read what it says here? What's it say? It says Club UU, and Club UU is our youth group for K through 5th graders. And when I first started it, I think it was 4 years ago, we had a service called the youth service. And at that service, as a surprise, I got this sweatshirt from parents. So to me, this is the perfect symbol. At our church, we talk about giving of our time, our talent, and our treasure. And this sweatshirt represents all of that. One of the youth designed this, so they used their talent. Everyone took their time. Someone took the time to think of that. Someone took the time to go and order it. Someone took the time to pick it up. And everyone gave a little bit to help fund this sweatshirt. And that doesn't sound like a lot. It probably was $3 or $4 each. But that little bit of money all put together gave me this sweatshirt that I absolutely love. And every time I put it on, I think how valued I am here. So it's not just a sweatshirt. It's much more. So there's all kinds of ways you can be generous. You can give of your time. Like someone said, you can say hello to a new friend. You can give of your treasures. Lila said maybe you can give a pencil to someone. Or you can give of your time, like being nice to someone. You can give of your talents. If you have a particular talent that can help someone else out. All of us in individual ways can choose to do those things in our everyday life, as well as right here in our church. And it looks like Esme really wants to tell me something.
And you can also be kind. You can, like, give someone your cat.
You could. If sometimes that has happened where people, I had to give up my cat one time. I couldn't live with my cat anymore because I was moving to a new house. and I had to give my cat away. And that was a generous thing of the people taking my cat, and it was generous to give away my cat. But most people probably wouldn't choose to give their cat, but that would be a very generous thing. All right, thank you so much.
And now I invite you to listen to a wonderful stewardship message from some of our young stewards of this church.
Love is something if you give it away.
Each week in this portion of the service, we provide you with an opportunity for generosity. We're called to take care of this place, this house, and which in so many ways is a home to us. We're called to take care of not just buildings, although that's important. We're called to take care of all aspects of this institution, to take care of our religious education and our youth programs. Take care of our sick and our elderly, to take care of worship and meeting the spiritual needs of all who come through these doors. We're called to take care of this now, to take care of this as the legacy we've received from those who came before us, and to take care of it so it's there to pass on to the future. The pledge you make to this church and the money that you contribute each week in the plate allows us together not only to take care of all that we have to offer here, but also to reach out to the world and to give a portion to a worthy local, national, or international charity. During the month of February, one half of the non-pledge offering of cash and checks received will go to the WEMA International, which we formerly knew as the Medulla Water Project. Under the leadership of our member Liz McGovern, this church has been involved in this project that brings water to villages in Ethiopia now for many years. The project is making great progress, and the morning offering will be split with that project. We'll now gratefully accept that offering to take care of this house and its ministry, and to reach out with love and to support the world.
Take care of this house, keep it from harm. If bandits break in, sound the alarm. Care for this house, shine it by hand, and keep it so clean the glow can be seen all over the land. Be careful at night, check all the doors. If someone makes off with a dream, the dream will be yours. Take care of this house, be always on call. For this house is the hope of us all. Take take care of this house. Keep it from harm. If bandits break in, sound the alarm. Care for this house, shine it by hand, and keep it so clean the glow can be seen all over the land. Be careful at night, check all the doors. If someone makes off with a dream, the dream will be yours. Take care of this house. Be always on call. Care for this house. It's the hope of us all.
Morning. Happy Groundhog Day. This is at least the third time I've spoken during stewardship season about what First Parish means to me. 10 years ago, I spoke about community, while last year I spoke about how this church stands for and works on behalf of social justice. Today, I'd like to talk about the spiritual side of things. Supporting the Spirit is also a good reason to contribute financially to First Parish Church. Many come to church to fulfill intense longings. Once each week, on Sundays from September to June, I get to spend about an hour reflecting, worshiping, and working on the restoration of my soul. It's difficult to say what's going on in this deeply interior process. The way I think of it is that coming to worship service for an hour each week keeps me grounded. And what I'm implying is that the rest of my week can be more or less emotionally destabilizing. So what goes on during the rest of a typical week? Well, many good things, of course. My wife's good cooking and affections, watching my sons come into manhood, reading, writing, playing guitar, enjoying friends. But I spend at least a part of every week angry. For example, I might get totally aggravated listening to NPR, learning about the treachery of nefarious Republicans who insist that everything that's wrong with this country comes from poor people having too much money and rich people not having enough. Or sometimes I'm depressed thinking about Syria or fracking or the latest school shooting, over 24 since Sandy Hook and counting, or drones over Pakistan. I tell you, I gotta stop listening to NPR. Many hours in a typical week, the constant struggle to earn a living and support my family stresses me out. Take this week, for example. The big boss calls us in for an early morning meeting on Wednesday to tell us that the company didn't earn enough money last year and we've all been asleep at the wheel and we'd better step it up, damn it, because the equity investors who own us aren't happy and if things don't change, heads will roll. Near as I could figure out, if we all kill ourselves to make the company rich, the equity investors get a nice ROI, the big boss probably gets a seven-figure bonus, and the rest of us, well, we get to keep our jobs. And of course I worry about our kids and my health and our retirement fund and how Peggy will do when I'm gone. And then I come here to this spare but beautiful sanctuary. The sky might be a deep, headstrong blue, and the warm sunlight, even in winter, floods through those tall windows. I sit, I reflect, I achieve some calm. I listen, and I get some perspective. I feel grounded. It might be a reading that helps. For example, this one. Out of the stars in their flight, out of the dust of eternity, here have we come, stardust and sunlight, mingling through time and through space. That's by Robert Weston, reading 530 in your gray hymnal. Check out the entire text sometime. It reminds me that I am but a speck on a splotch on a speck in a speck in a speck. That is, respectively, a body on a continent, on a planet, in a solar system, in a 400 billion star galaxy, the Milky Way, that is one of, conservatively, 170 billion galaxies in the part of the universe that we can see. We are beyond a rounding error in our insignificance. And yet, it's still miraculous that we're here. Or this reading I heard in church once by Kathleen McTeague. We come together this morning to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude. Claim for yourself awareness and gratitude. You can bet I put that quotation up on my bulletin board at work. Or how about these words? This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. It was here during worship that my love affair with Rumi started, a poet I've been rereading for almost 10 years now, thanks to First Parish Church. But it doesn't have to be a reading. Often it's just the beauty of the music. It's not uncommon for me to hear a musical number on a Sunday morning and think to myself, ah, that alone was reason enough for coming. And I must say, here at the 9 o'clock service, usually that music comes from Sanghi. At the risk of embarrassing her a little bit, let me say right now, Sanghi, thank you, for you are a treasure to this church. Finally, of course, sometimes it's the good news from the pulpit. Occasionally, Reverend Tom recycles a sermon he's already preached, and I don't even mind. It's like hearing an old tale or meeting an old friend again. For example, the one about Uncle T, struggling with dementia, but still able to remember 1 John chapter 4, verse 8. God is love. God is love. God is love. All of these are forms of perspective, the perspective of eternity or infinity, the perspective of beauty, the perspective of love, the spirit of this church. And getting perspective grounds us. As I dwell together with all of you in what inner peace I can attain during this small piece of my week, arriving here carrying my worries and stresses, my frustrations and sadnesses, I get grounded enough to face the new week with perhaps a little more strength to try to be kinder, more patient, more grateful, and mindful. It's an effort to get here. Some mornings it would be easier to sleep in. Sometimes I'm really tired, and I do. Also, sitting still, listening, and reflecting can be work. But then this church reinforces the value of those efforts, too. I'm reminded of, and will close with, a brief poem by Wendell Berry called The Real Work, which I will quote in its entirety. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to share with you a short reading by a colleague of mine, Scott Alexander. He writes, I give to my church because it tells the truth about who I am. If I did not, it would say that I was a person who had nothing to give, or I was a person who received nothing from life, or I was a person who did not matter to the larger society, or I was a person whose life meaning was solely in providing for my own needs. But in fact, I'm the opposite of all these things. I am a person who has something to give. I am a person who has received abundantly from life. I am a person whose presence matters in the world. I am a person whose life has meaning because I'm connected to and care about many things larger than myself alone. If I did not give generously, I would lose track of these truths about who I am. By giving generously, I remember who I am. As I was thinking about those words from Scott Alexander, it came to me that I think we sometimes do forget who we are. We forget that we are people who have received much and have much to give. We become so preoccupied with meeting our needs, providing for ourselves, that we forget how much more to life there is than that. We can become so engaged with accumulating and holding on to what we have that we lose track of the bigger things that we truly do care about. Now, yes, we all need to look out for ourselves and to prepare for our futures. But that love inside us that we sing of calls us to do more with what we have than to only take care of ourselves and our immediate family. As most of you know, I just returned from a month in Mexico. The average person there lives on very little. A wage equivalent to $50 a week is considered quite good. You can imagine, most can afford very, very little beyond just the essentials of life. Every time I walk through the streets of San Miguel and engage with these warm and welcoming Mexican people, I'm reminded how fortunate I am to have what I have. I see these families living happily, yet so simply, and I think how they could never believe how much we have. And when I walk further down the street, and I see an old woman with terribly deformed limbs sitting on the sidewalk with her head bowed and her hand extended like this, I feel that she's a gift to remind me of who I am. A person who has something to give. A person who, unlike her, has received abundantly from life. A person who does care about things larger than myself. She helps me to grow a more generous heart. And when I hand her a few coins, I have not solved her problems or the failures of the system that caused her to be in this position. But what I've done matters, at least a little. And when she receives the coins and says a blessing to me, I feel something growing in my heart, a connection to her and to those like her. It's a very small, short interaction. But for me, this moment in the streets of Mexico is a spiritual moment, a moment in which I feel the generosity in my heart growing. I'm reminded of these words from the Reverend Marilyn Sewell. When we give, we feel the depth of our powers to create, to heal, to love. These are spiritual powers which, when exercised, enlarge our souls. When we give and when our gift is received, both the giver and the receiver are blessed. Not just on the streets in Mexico, but every day and here in my own community, I need to think about how I can help with the gifts I have. We all need to think about what we can do to make a difference with the skills, the time, the talent, the money we have. We are all so blessed, and there's so much that, in fact, we can do with our gifts that we we may not even think of. The Reverend Rebecca Parker writes, "Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what's holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer the question, what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude, to search for the source of power and grace, native wisdom, healing and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, its chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, there is another possibility, waiting. You know, the great religions of the world all teach us about that possibility, about what we should do with what we have, our gifts. Indeed, the cultivation of generosity is fundamental to every one of these major faith traditions. The Buddha expressed it this way: if you knew, as I do, the power of giving, you would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it. But the Buddha was not alone in emphasizing the importance of generosity as a principle of faith. If you look at the Bible, both the Jewish and Christian scriptures, you will find that one verse in every eight deals with the relationship between faith and how you use your money and possessions. Of the Ten Commandments, three provide instructions on how you should use your money and possessions. Of the 38 or so parables of Jesus, 16 deal with the relationship of what you say you believe and how you use your money and possessions. In fact, of everything that Jesus talks about, the number two topic is, guess what? The use of money and possessions. And Islam is no less bashful in addressing the importance of generous giving. One of the five pillars or principal teachings of Islam is called zakat, which is the requirement that every Muslim, every year, give away 2.5% of his or her total assets. Religions guide us in so many ways as to how we should live our lives. But primary among these teachings is the importance of generosity to us, the giver, and of course to our community and the world that receives the gift. One of the most important things a religion can teach us is the practice of growing a generous heart. One of my recently retired colleagues, Tom Owen Toll, put it this way: the older I get, the more I realize that the primary religious quality is generosity, giving liberally of our time, talent, and resources to those communities that bring us abundant life. That jumps out at me. It captures it for me. It's why, even though I give to many fine charitable causes, and even though I give directly to poor people on the streets in Mexico, the place where I make my largest contribution is to my church and to my faith tradition. For this is a community and a tradition that in so many ways brings abundant life. It does so through the support and inspiration we provide to each other in good times and in bad times. It does so in the works of love and justice it inspires us to do. The gifts I give to my church keep on giving. We teach our children to grow a heart filled with generosity so they will embark on a lifetime of giving and will bring the values of this faith to the world of the future. Over the past few weeks, and again this morning, you heard testimony from several members who shared with you why First Parish is important to them. From comforting to spiritually uplifting to just being there for them. From raising our children to serving our seniors. From countless acts of love and justice to learning and even to fun times. This place brings us abundant life and helps us to bring it to many beyond its walls. Think about it. Bob Tabor and Joe Holmes are doing that in India right now. Liz McGovern and the Water Project we're supporting today are doing it in Ethiopia. Many of us are doing it at the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry in Roxbury, or a neighborhood center in Fitchburg, or a domestic violence shelter in Framingham. It's our faith and our church community that at least in part inspires these actions, supports us in these actions, and is there for us, the doers of those actions, in our times of need. What we celebrate here today is not building buildings or raising money. It's making possible those things that bring about abundant life. It's happening everywhere here. It's in our music program, our religious education program, our shared ministry, our worship, our reaching out to the world, social justice, love and justice, our support for each other, the learning, the good times. And it's even in our private personal actions that in some way have their roots in the teachings that are reinforced by this faith tradition. You know, over the years, I've come to know a few people with great wealth who do wonderful things with their money. One said to me, "I'm a generous person because my church and family taught me not just that this was expected of me, but that this is what will make my life meaningful." And they were right. I would have been very confused in how to lead my life if I had not been blessed with those teachings at an early age. On this Stewardship Sunday, it's important that we recognize not just the needs of this church for our time and our talent and our money, but also the importance of the cultivation of the spiritual practice of generosity. What our stewardship campaign each year really asks of us is to honestly embrace the spiritual practice of generosity. I hope you'll use what you have, your time, your talent, and your treasure, bless this community, and in doing so, to truly bless yourself. You know, we have an awful lot to celebrate here at FPC. So many people here have made generous decisions about how to use what they have. You can see the progress we've made on our huge capital improvement project. We still have a way to go, and there have been some extra costs, but we are doing this project because with it, we can make a difference in the programs of our church and in the way we serve our community. And when it's completed, hopefully in only a few months, what a blessing it will be. It'll be making us safer for our children and our elderly and those with mobility issues, and truly for all of us. It will truly make us handicapped accessible, and it will provide much needed new space to better serve the needs, not just of those in our church, but also in the greater community and for generations into the future. Truth is, we have asked a lot of you, and we are now asking again. This Sunday is when you commit to give generously to this church for the next year. So many of you are giving just incredible amounts of time and talent to this church, especially in this capital improvements project. And some of you have already made a financial pledge for this coming church year. This Sunday is also a time when I have the privilege to express to you the thanks of this entire community. Even to express the thanks for those who will be the future community. I know that these gifts come from your heart, that they're given in love, and often with some sacrifice. And they express a great deal about who you are and what you care about. What we ask of you is indeed a thoughtful gift, one given with a generous heart. For some people, that'll be a lot of money. For others, especially those on fixed income, it will be much smaller. Yes, as you read in the letter and material that went out to you, we need about $25,000 increase over last year to meet our projected expenses. So for those of you who are able, I invite you to join me in increasing your pledge over what you gave from last year. But even if you're unable to contribute any money to this church, know that by your presence and your service and just your commitment to this institution, you too are good stewards. Your role, your respect, the services you receive from this church have no relationship to the money you're able to contribute. And whatever you do contribute is kept strictly confidential. You received a pledge card in your program on your way in this morning, and if you've already made a generous pledge, I sincerely thank you. If you've not yet pledged, I invite you to do so when I conclude the sermon in just a minute, and then place the card in the envelope provided and seal it. Now, if you pledged and you're so inspired by the service this morning that you want to raise the pledge, go ahead and we'll just take the higher number and fill out the card. The envelopes are going to be collected as you leave this morning. You know, I know personally that figuring out how much to give is not easy. For me, there is always an inherent conflict in my brain. On one hand, there's the amount I would truly like to give when I think how important the church is to me and to the community. And when I think about that amount, I'm not thinking about it in terms of my other expenses. The mortgage, the car payment, the fuel bill are all far from my mind when I think of this kind of giving. Then on the other hand, there's the budget-minded me, the one who thinks, well, I'll have to carefully calculate what's left after I pay those bills and then see what I contribute. What I want to tell you is I don't think either of those methods are the way to determine what you should give. A generous gift has to push us a bit and should not be just what's left over after everything else is paid. But neither should it cause great distress and require that other bills go unpaid so you could fulfill your pledge. I hope you make a pledge that you can feel good about because it's truly generous for you. A pledge that tells the truth about who you are, a person with something to give, who has received abundantly and wants to give back, and who is connected to and cares about so many things larger than yourself. Thank you. The spiritual practice of generosity with respect to your pledge, and for the gifts of time and talent that you give to this church. Thank you for the many blessings you give to each other in the world through the pledge you make, and even for the blessings that you give to yourself when you make a truly generous pledge. All during the month of February, our worship will be guided by our denominational theme, seated on our building, standing on the side of love. It means that we're called to put our love into action and that we are here to grow together in our love. It was our Universalist forebears who preached that there is only one essential message to religion. You heard Michael refer to it this morning, that God is love. Or to put it another way, love is the most powerful force in the world. A loving heart is always a generous heart. In true generosity, where nothing is expected in return, is one of the purest expressions of love.